Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Take Two Radio. This is Pam, your host, and tonight I have with me my lovely co-host, Dawn. Hello, Dawn.
Hello, Miss Pam. Gosh, it's Friday night, and I'm so glad because the day has been crazy.
Hello, everyone.
It has been a wild day. The whole week has been that way. I am so glad it's finally Friday. The weekend's here, and I'm sure everybody kind of mirrors my thoughts there. So hopefully everybody tweaks a little bit better than mine. But anyhow.
Well, tonight we're so happy. We have Christian LeBlanc. Not sure if that's him on the other line. Let me go ahead and check that because he was having issues.
Unmuted.
Hello?
Thank goodness. I'm tweeting, waiting in the queue right now. I see you. I see you wherever you go.
Yes. And we see you wherever you go.
I hear you, and they had muted me, and I'm calling, and I go, I wonder if I pressed the right button. I'm just queuing now. I can Twitter them mercilessly while I'm waiting in the queue. And
I
how much do I love
everybody
that you're,
know
that
you had issues. So
I know. I thought, yeah, I do have issues, but it's not that time. I love that the British, your assistant is British.
You're now
waiting in the queue. Just up the whole thing really to a grand style. I like it.
Isn't it there?
I want to talk back to her like, I'm in the queue.
And you know what? We liked her in the beginning, too, until we had to keep listening to her for every show.
I know,
oh,
right?
God.
It's like your GPS. I'm like, oh, for Christ's sake.
Like, we don't know what time it is. Like, you know, the clock is ticking in front of us. We have.
I want the beer swiller voice from Georgia, you know. How are you? Would you just please turn already? Hand to God if you don't turn. I will
cut
you.
Sounds like Dawn.
Right? Look, I've got Georgians in my house. They're walking behind me going, don't bag on the Georgians.
Yeah.
Whatever. Whatever, Southerners.
Hey, well, you know.
He just yelled out, South's going to do it again. No. It's not always a gift to know funny people.
Yeah,
exactly. It can be a curse.
Well, you have something in common with Dawn. You're both from North Carolina.
Yeah, well, originally, yeah, Army brat, so I'm really always pretty much saying New Orleans, but I do love North Carolina. I was just there. It is the most beautiful place. Hello?
Dawn?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay.
Was that someone, that's a button, for God's sake.
Yeah, there you go. No,
there you go.
You
fell
right.
Asleep on the mute.
No, North Carolina is a beautiful place. I love it. I love the fact that, you know, you're 3.5 hours from the coast, you're 3 hours from the mountains. And,
oh, I just love the mountains. And my dad went to Chapel Hill. Mm-hmm.
He was
in
Chapel Hill.
Mm-hmm. What part of North Carolina?
Well, he went to Buies, and I was in class, and I went, yeah, my dad went to Buies Creek.
Buies Creek.
Right. And all of a sudden, in the fourth row, a new guy, who's the sweetest guy, you know, but young and dewy, just right off the bus. Buies Creek, I haven't heard anyone say that in ages. I'm like, oh, God bless. There you go. There you,
you
go.
Know,
fourth row
you
back.
Know you're, yeah,
sweetest
you know
guy
in
the world.
That's right. So I would assume that your dad, if you were in, you were born
Green
in Fayetteville, that your dad was stationed at Bragg.
Fort Bragg.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning,
yes,
he was
indeed.
In the beginning of the Green Berets. He was Vietnam and Korea. Oh, yeah. He was the first batch, one of the first batches.
My son just got back from there because he's a Marine, and he was stationed at Camp Lejeune.
Oh, Mazel Tov, yeah. That's, mm-hmm. I mean, I used to think of Fayetteville and Fort Bragg, you know, as a little tiny kid. I'm thinking, you know, dogwood trees and clay paths. Well, it's got a little more reputation than that, Fayetteville. A bit of a red light district there for the military.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm like, oh, y'all, they had lakes and trees and beautiful flowers. And the military people with me are like looking at me like, uh-huh, uh-huh. Like they never saw a tree.
Maybe. Yeah, really?
They never went looking for one. I'm sorry.
No. No, that is pretty well known here. If you're in North Carolina, that's no secret for me.
I had no idea. See what they don't tell the 4-year-olds?
You know, you would think. I mean, really, what in the world?
Well, I've been to New Orleans, and I have to say that I love it there, too.
Oh, that's my heart. That's all my family's down there. LeBlanc is, I'm the genealogy freak, so, you know, you can just call a halt to the whole horrible mess as I start spewing. But, yeah, even my father's like, okay, whatever, 1816. 1765, first LeBlanc from my part of the family, and there's a lot of them, went into Louisiana from escaping the British up in Nova Scotia. So it's fascinating history. But the city itself, and I guess maybe when you move away from your home too, but, you know, the children's novel, my artwork, it all kind of references that. And there's a great mafia here. You know, Anne Rice is out here and her son Christopher, and Grace Zabriskie was born in the French Quarter. There's a great little – I did a short film with nothing but Louisiana people here. And it's just you have a similar – you're like anyone – you have a similar aesthetic at your hometown, and
right.
New Orleans is such a strong mm-hmm. culture there, and so specific. You need somebody who knows the weird.
Yeah, and,
you know,
and they chose
weird.
You, or did you choose yourself?
You know what? They just gravitate. You smell it. I mean,
it's
you know what? You could read
you know?
The police report if you want, but really, you have to develop a sixth sense of this thing.
You'll have to tweet that out.
It's a very Mardi Gras experience.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that it's a very, very interesting place to be. You have a little bit of everything there, and including your ghosts and your voodoo and all that kind of good stuff. But the only one thing that my husband wanted to go on the crocodile or the alligator.
A swamp tour, yeah.
Yeah, that thing. And I was like, no, thank you.
Yeah, I just was down. I never did it in Louisiana. When at Tulane, I used to go into Honey Island Swamp. I was in science. So you're doing environmental surveys out there, but it's stunning. You know, you're in the middle of the deepest swamp and one of the largest ones in the country. But
mm-hmm.
I just came back from Florida. I had done a wonderful charity raising money for, autism. And here I was in a fan. My dream fan got Jeff Branson, a friend of mine on the show, and in a fan boat in the middle of the Everglades, and it was amazing. And saw all those things, the crocodiles, the wreck. You know, it was just beautiful, beautiful.
I'm
but
sure
that was my
it
wish
is,
list.
But I get seasick too, so I probably wouldn't even do good on that.
I'm fine until you get to ocean swells and like little fishing boats like that. That was the
mm-hmm.
only time. And diesel, kind of when you have the diesel fumes from the back of the boat, it's not a big
mm-hmm.
boat. But again, I mean, we got hit by something on one of the soap tours. We were mid-ocean, mid-Gulf. And I mean, half the boat was sick. None of the crew showed up. You know, it was really, it's interesting. You think you're fine. Don Diamont takes pills. Ha, I'll tell on him. He was like, I'm ready. I'm done. I'm on it. You know,
well, then
prepped.
I'd have to be sitting next
oh,
to him
hilarious.
And say, give me some of them.
Yeah,
nah,
exactly.
I tell you,
that's right.
It can be evil.
Which, by the way, thank you for sharing all those pictures from the Florida trip because and the video, too. I checked all that out, and that was so
neat
to see some of the footage. Yes, it looked like you guys were having a blast.
Well, you know, it's about 99.9% of my travel is for charity. So
mm-hmm.
you're kind of roughing it sometimes relatively,
mm-hmm.
you know, cross-country flight. We just did Toronto. I flew out on a red
mm-hmm.
eye on a Thursday night. People arrived Friday. We did the thing Sunday. Poor Tracy Bregman, who plays my wife Lauren, you know, was there anyway, but her flight was canceled. She arrives at 4 in the morning. She does her first show for the shopping thing network
yes.
and then gets to the tea, our charity tea, and then has to leave after a few hours to another one, to another gig. So, I mean, it's like traveling. It's so important. The best thing is to find somebody that travels well with you.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you, there's the people who, when things go to hell, complain. And there's the people that, when things go to hell, you both laugh harder. And those are the people I love traveling with. And they're generally the people I do these teas with and all these kind of things. You know, sometimes I'll be talking to Melody Scott. God bless her. You know, she doesn't need to do this anymore. She's like, I would kill myself. And I said, no, you wouldn't. I'd give you 5 minutes. You'd be fighting your way onto the stage to help us.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just,
there
it is. She's it's in her blood. You know, the actor, Hambone. She would jump. But you know, she initially was like, I'm not getting on one of those. But it's the most fun. I find that I'm exhausted. I mean, my voice hasn't come back. But between you know Florida and Toronto, But we raised $50,000 for March of Dimes in Toronto in a couple of hours. And that's the thing you have to give back. And, you know, I don't go and, you know, I don't do the soup. I mean, I don't do a lot of things. I want to do more. I do stuff in New Orleans and stuff. But these kind of things are just there. You have a ball, and it's hard to tell people that, you know, it's a charity, that you're doing it for, you know, I'm giving back. Because, really, you know, I have some of the best times. I have the best stories. They're all on video. You can see them.
Yeah, you tweet them out. I mean, a lot of videos, and I have to laugh at most of them. You're hysterical. My gosh,
mm-hmm.
What must it be like to work with you or just to hang with you? How does anybody keep a straight face?
But, you know, it's nothing like the character, which I love.
No.
You know, no, I worked hard to keep. You don't know. The only thing, I mean, when I took the gig and you hear about people, you know, 20, 30 years on shows, or even people running in plays for a year, doing the same lines every night. And I was just really prepared to see if I would be bored and I'd have to walk, you know, because you don't want to be one of the walking zombies who are just doing it for a paycheck. You don't want that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you know what? The character has always been so far away from who I am, which
mm-hmm.
is work, which is the heart of acting. You know, I get to do something, be someone who I totally, you know, there's some points of reference, but I had to create something and give it a life. And then you can't, you know, I have to go on set and then focus. It's work. It's like, wait. That's not me. I can't do that. I have to be Michael now. You know what I mean?
You got to get your ADD under control.
It's a challenge. Yeah, it's a challenge, right? The ADD, or many other things under, you know, control that, you know, they don't have medication for.
Right.
Things preserve us all. But yeah, I mean, I like that it's work to be Michael, because, I mean, that keeps the challenge in.
Well, I would sum up your career on Y&R as, you were a good boy, you were a bad boy, and now you're a good boy again.
You know, that's so simple to say. You know what I like about him, and that's kept me interested, and the writers gave me that, is that he is a good person. Does, you know, he does bad things for the right reasons, and does good things for the wrong. He's a human being, and I think that's the only reason someone who did such nefarious things has had a life on the show. Because, you know, Phyllis, Michael's character, a couple of others, they were meant to be killed. Kevin's. We have a family of people who should have been off. Those usually are 2-year contracts and you're out. That's what I was originally. I mean, I wasn't supposed to go past the Christine storyline, and neither was Michelle Stafford for hers.
Thank God you all did.
Well, it's a gift.
I know.
Thank you. I think Michelle's probably the most talented actress on television, daytime or nighttime. I'd love to see. I mean, she makes me better anytime I work with her. There are a couple people on the show. You know, we want to be a better tennis player. You go find someone who's better than you.
Mm-hmm.
It's really like that with the scenes with her. But, yeah, you'll thank goodness. And, again, Bill Bell was smart enough to keep her. And, I mean, he even called me. And I didn't know till Michael Maloney wrote the great book, you know, that's out there, but the autobiography, The Young and the Restless Life of William J. Bell. He said that was the first time. Because Bill and Lee said they'd call me. You know, we have to fire you. You're so evil now. We have to leave. The fans won't put up with it. This is how close to reality he got.
Oh, I'm sure.
Which is a hard thing to stick to when you're doing a show a day. He said they will not put up with you getting off for this. So they sent me to jail, and I thought, you know, I won't wait for that phone call.
Right.
And I was doing theater, and I got teach. Yeah, you know, it's very sweet, but, you know, you don't sit around.
Right.
And he called me, and I was in the middle, and, you know, I probably wouldn't be any good if I hadn't had that time off, because I found my teachers then, because I was medicine. I wasn't an actor.
Right.
Wasn't trained as an actor in school. I knew I was going to be a doctor. I worked since grammar school. So I had to play a little catch-up. And when they let me go, I remember thinking, you think like an academic, you know, because you work that hard, you make another grade, you know. So
mm-hmm.
I was like, you know, I'm going to get teachers, and I'm going to be so good that the next time they go down the list, fired. No, you know, Christian was good today. We'll fire the next time. You know, that's how I think.
Yeah.
I'll go to the next grade, which really acting has nothing to do with that.
Right.
Right. The streets are strewn with talented actors who are bad businessmen, or some kind of permutation of that. But they called me back, and Michael Maloney said that was the first time that had happened. And he called me once. I had to turn him down, which is always good for the soul, because I was committed to the play, and we were hopefully with Julie Harris going to Broadway, and then we didn't. And right on time, he called again, and I said yes. I jumped on that puppy. And 16 years later.
Here you are.
There you go.
Well, I know that I read that you were in school for pre-med and also history. I mean, what got you excited and wanting to be in acting of all things?
This is so funny.
That's different realms.
Yeah. No, and I had actually sung in college. I was in that, you know, that great top 40 singing group that, you know, every college had.
Yeah.
Tulanians. And I'd done some musicals, but never thought of it as a game. I like my paycheck every week, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved medicine. I loved patient care. I'd worked in hospitals, like I said, since grammar school. Even in college, I worked at the all-night emergency radios and stuff like that. I knew I loved it. Anything I know about drama, actually, I learned in the emergency room and in hospitals, in rehab. The rest is cake. But I needed a way to pay for it. And a friend of mine who is a doctor now, Joey Gallinghouse, Dr. Gallinghouse now, was a handsome, handsome man, and was making all this money doing GQ spreads and back in the day. And I was a swimmer. I would still swim even though all my friends had made it into medical school and I was waitlisted. So I was working at the hospital trying to prove that I could do chemistry. So I was in the laboratories all the time. And I would go back and still swim with my mates at Tulane. And one guy, their photographer, so two things happened. The same, the photographer showed up, and he sent me to this little agency, and I got my first commercial, which was for root beer, but nobody told me that you're supposed to spit. You're not supposed to sit there and drink all the takes.
Oh, my gosh,
because you get sick.
Oh, gosh.
There's a bucket sitting next to you, and I'm going, what's that nasty bucket? Well, somebody get this bucket away from me. You're supposed to be spitting the beer in that bucket. Because if you drink for 20,000 takes, you're just going to get sick. So I'm drinking the Barks root beer and drinking, just having it, smiling. This is delicious, you know, and I'm slowly becoming ill. So I get home, and I pass out of my little garret apartment in New Orleans down in the uptown area, so old that when, it's at the very top in the attic. The woman showed me the apartment, my landlady, and when I got it, she gave me a big, thick coil of rope and said, this in case of a fire. That is New Orleans in a nutshell. Everything's so old. It's like, yeah, you throw that cord out the window and shimmy down.
Yeah.
Get out of that fire. There you go. I remember to this day a huge coil of rope. But they called, and when I hit the bed thinking I'll never be sicker than this, they called me up and said I got this PBS series in Jackson, Mississippi. I'd never lived away from home. Did that, and a friend, you know, just ignorant, you know, some of it's like, well, you know, I'm going up to New York. I lived there. And he had done commercials in Atlanta, so he was a real actor. Wow. I knew that.
Yeah.
Yep. And I moved. Yeah, Atlanta. Everything's around Atlanta, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I moved up to New York on a whim. But I remember my brother was getting married, and he asked me to be in the wedding. And it was a sudden thing. I said, I can't miss the – for some reason, I knew I couldn't miss the flight. If I didn't go, I wasn't going to. I don't know why, because I wasn't planning anything, but to – explore it. I was on leave from the hospital, that's all. And so I went up there. And I got to tell you, it was a year in the middle of As the World Turns, and that was my first big gig. I realized I liked it. And I went around, a nerd school guy. I went around the studio asking people why they were actors. I just remember this, like that book, Are You My Mother?
Did they look at you cross-eyed?
Oh, you know what? Honestly, I didn't get made fun of. That's what's interesting. Other actors might have understood the point. I didn't go into any explanation. I was just, why are you an actor? Just, you know, out of conversation. And the best answer I got, and remember, I mean, that day, my girlfriends were Marissa Tomei and Julianne Moore, and Meg Ryan was on the show, and Margaret Collin and Justin D, and these amazing
actors. Oh, wow, yeah, good names.
Mm-hmm.
And Roy is on our – Kate McNeil is her name, and is her name. Wonderful actress. She was just on Mad Men. And I went up to her, and she said, you know, I will just want one place where I can be 100% honest. And I was like, you know, that's good enough. That's a good – you know, because, I mean, I was – you're raised in school. I was a Catholic. But all of us, to be of service somewhere, that's what your mom and father want you to be. They would be
right.
of service
mm-hmm.
somehow. And you know, doctor right away you get. You understand what that is. But acting, you really have to find why you're doing it. You know, if you want to. I mean, people do it, just they fall into it and they stay. But if you stay in it, and I realized I was loving it. It wasn't just, you know, that I couldn't go back to the hospital. But I needed a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And you discover that. You discover, and your reasons will change, just like relationships. You have to fall in love with your profession, I think, over and over again in a different way as you grow older and you learn more and you change as a person. But at that time, and it still sticks in my mind, to be truth, because that's the heart of the profession, if you're going to be a good one, is to be honest. And it was really a fascinating end. I still know Kate, and her husband works on our show as a stage manager, which is so funny, years in.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then
I keep that connection.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's such a small tribe of people, honestly, at the end of the day. And you'll see each other either in New York or L.A. And also sometimes it's the person who white knuckles it the longest. My plan is to age out everybody.
Yeah.
And I will be the most successful elderly man ever.
Yeah.
Well,
you're
going to
have to outlive what Eric Braeden, right?
What's that?
So you're going to have to live out Eric Braeden.
And you know, it'll be me, him, and the roaches. That's it.
Yeah.
That'll be it.
That'll be a heck of a show by then, you know?
Yeah, right? But, you know, well, hell, don't put anything past us. The show must go on.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Now, in all the years that you have been on YNR, do you have a particular storyline that just stands out for you that's your favorite?
I got just out of synchronicity of I just found it interesting. The storyline when Kevin comes on was so interesting because it happened so abruptly and was such an it was just an inspiration to Jack Smith, who was the executive producer. And as he puts it, and you know, Kevin was online to be let go. Tell me, we were all evil. Well, I had gotten over it and come back.
Mm-hmm.
But Kevin was also stalking Crystal on the internet, Lily. Bad guy. And the story, as Jack says it, his daughter was watching, and they said, those two guys look so much alike. And as soon as we started working together, we would be inundated with tweets and letters about how are we really brothers, which I thought, I didn't see it at all. I mean, I think Greg is amazing, and really, I was so lucky. But that when they brought him in, and the whole, and they built a backstory, which I had in my head a little, but you know, because Michael for years was saying I'm alone in the world,
right?
So all of a sudden they had to make this big change, but it worked. You know, if you're going to be abusive to women, could it be because your mother was useless as you were being pounded by your stepfather? What's your attitude to a woman who's inconsequential and didn't protect you? How do you treat women in your life? Do you use them and take them of no consequence? And Christine would be a huge threat because all of a sudden it's a smart woman and he loves smart. How can he discard her or how can he make her less than she is? And there you have this crisis. And falling in love is a giving up control. Don't you want to control if your world is about this abuse and about leaving your brother and letting him be beaten while you take off? And would you gravitate maybe to the law because it's all black and white because you grew up in a family in a home that was gray?
Right.
You didn't know where to turn. They made this amazing background. And I don't know if they didn't. I never went up and told them my backstory in my head. But the alone for me was such an interesting thing to play for Michael because I have eight brothers and sisters just there.
Yeah.
And to think of somebody who has no mother, father, or children is that's why he initially started amazingly different from me. Then you had to make something different because, I mean, how do you – what's it like to be alone in the world that way at a young age?
Mm.
You know, it was an interesting – and that's why Michael started very different and lonely, basically. And I think that's what people read into the character, and I think that was – because you have to have whatever your character does to for any kind of life for the character, something – they have to want to watch something about him. Something has to keep people's eyes on him.
You have to know why you act out the way you do. So
and
otherwise,
they have
no
to understand you somehow. Yeah, they have to get it. Exactly.
Right.
And so they brought.
I love.
And,
I was going to say I love the way that YNR has brought the two characters together, and also just brought everything full circle. You know, and it's amazing because, you know, you both are good guys on the show now, and so it's almost like you forget those early days when the evil reigned, you know, and it's just been brilliant writing, brilliant.
It is. And then they give us the, you know, I love that we fight, like we're the crazy family, we fight like a real family.
A normal one for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah, you know what I mean? I watch some people, you know, sometimes you watch a movie or something like two brothers are arguing, I'm like, really?
Yeah.
That is nothing.
Right.
Those are like two little 12-year-old girls. Who are they? You know, because you know you do. For family, you save up the meanest, wickedest things that you would never do to a stranger.
That's right. Yeah.
And
exactly.
I love that Greg is in there full bore and Gloria and, you know, it's, and now I have Fenmore who's wonderful that they've made him dark. And
yeah.
It fits, you know. And it,
it
and,
really
and
does.
I get to be an ass at the courtroom. So Michael never leaves the dark side. I've tried to always put it in there. And Lauren is the good woman who saved him with a past. I love that they made Lauren his wife, two people who were adults when they fell in love, who both had histories that weren't to be proud of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then
she's,
to bring in the son who's bullying. And I was the subject of bullying, and
mm-hmm.
Lauren was a bullier to poor
right.
Tracy. You know, so it's fascinating. I mean, I think I have the best character ever of any of the characters. It isn't just me, arguably.
Yeah, right.
But the synchronicity of the storylines blends so well. I think the family's so interesting. I'm endlessly, I mean, Judith is just a wonder to watch her as Gloria.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, and Lauren fitting into the Michael and the Kevin scenario. You know, just in how I meet Lauren and fall in love with her because she bails Kevin out, and I know he won't make it through the night in a jail. You know, and it makes total
mm-hmm.
sense that the brother that you felt so guilty about, she saves him, you're hers, you know. It's
yeah,
fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, I told the writers nothing. It was just, like I said, just by happenstance and the wonderful writing and the actors, you got this kind of family that I get. I love being a part of it.
Well, with the current storyline of Fen bullying, I mean, what would you say to kids these days about those horrible real-life situations?
Oh, it's so hard because, I mean, kids, we sound like our fathers.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the hardest lessons to learn as a child that you have to instill in them. I would imagine, I'm not a father, but, I, you know, when I
mm-hmm.
taught kindergarten, even at that level, that there are consequences to actions. And it's very hard these days, especially because there's such an era, I think, of instant gratification without thinking of the long-term results of things. I think long-term thinking is not the Americans in particular strong point. So I love the ones, especially, I mean, I know it's a niche kind of thing for the bullying and it'll be okay that the videos that people put out about gay teenagers being bullied and it'll, you know, eventually things will work out. I love that people put out these wonderful life-affirming things and they go for everybody. But
right.
it is a weird thing, and there's so many ways to do it now because the internet is anonymous.
Right.
You know, you don't have to go push somebody down face-to-face in a schoolyard, which
mm-hmm.
takes a bit of moxie. You know, you've got to, you know, you're out in public. People know. There's this insidious thing. I mean, and it works on all levels. These are otherwise reasonable adults will be talking to other adults. Fans will talk to people, and you're like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would you say that to their face? But it's always been the case,
yeah.
But I think this kind of venue is open to children, very young children. And, I mean, I would, you know, I wouldn't let them near Facebook or Twitter until they're in their 20s. I mean, I don't know what I'd do. It would just, it's one of those things where there's so many, you only have so many eyes to watch.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I have more children, so I know this very well.
Yeah, you ladies are mothers, you know way more than me. And in this day and age, I mean, when I was a kid, we could go play miles from the house and come home, you know, trick or treat. We got as much candy as we could possibly lug. And
yeah.
And that's going for blocks.
Yeah.
Apart. Nobody worried about us. But it's a different world. And kids are more sophisticated, I will tell you that.
Yeah.
Writing the novel that I'm writing, the one thing I wanted was not to talk down to them. And then I realized when you're going through it, it's like, wow, you don't have to. You can talk to them as almost little adults. There's just very few things that you have to soften.
And that's,
you know,
sad. That's sad.
It is sad.
Kids
it,
don't get to be kids anymore.
To childhood is shorter.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just I think parenting, if you can do it, and this isn't, it's not, unfortunately it's not, and no one should deny themselves being a parent because they can't. It's such a full-time job. I don't know. I think sometimes people stumble into it. Everyone has to make their own accommodation, and I can't judge. Like I said, I don't have them, and there's a reason.
You want some? I'll give you some of mine.
I know, right? That's exactly the reason. I have them over at my house all the time, and then I can say goodbye.
With eight brothers and sisters.
I got a billion nephews.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I loved. I went 24 hours on a trampoline with all the nieces and nephews, and I beat them. Oh, they were exhausted. I had a bottle of Advil afterwards, but I beat them. You know, they're like little elves. They just flew like popcorn.
Yeah.
But again, it's just your eyes have to be there. it's probably the most important profession in the world. It gets some of the least respect and support. I don't know why we don't have universal daycare. I mean, we're the only people who don't.
Please tell me about it. I know.
You know, it's just one of those things where if you're going to put your money where something is going to be cost effective and for future results. I mean, again, I don't think long-term thinking is an American, I mean, in the, you know, people in general, but certainly America is not great at that one.
Right.
I mean, I come from a history point of view with that. There's so little respect for history, which had its benefits, you know. We're not tied down to staid and old ideas and very innovative. But on the other hand, if you don't know something's history, you don't know that thing. If you're going to talk politics, know where things came from. There's a need for quick and easy, and there always has been. If you go back into history, any political, you know, politics, anything, give me the simple one that I can quick put in my pocket and feel comfortable with. You know, life's gray.
Well, I'd love to put my kids back in the 1800s and give them a little taste. I mean, heck, even the early 1900s, you know.
Did you ever see, that's such a good idea, but do you know, reality television, most of it should just be in the toilet. They had this great one on PBS. Did you ever see 1900 House?
No.
I would force my kids, if I had them, I would lock them to the TV. A modern British family had to come live in a 1900, built in 1900, and live as they did in the year 1900. Nothing else. And that's a wood stove, so the poor mothers are trying to regulate temperature on a burning fire.
Yeah,
there's cleaning that you would clean things with these toxic chemicals just because they had the idea about infection in those days. There's no entertainment. There's no phones. It was fascinating to see kids and everything. How you had to spend the time together at night.
I hope some of those were teen kids because those are the ones that really need to appreciate it.
They were smart. Exactly. All the electronics are gone. It was, and they had to have a maid, and the maid, poor thing, she had quit. They had to find another person to volunteer. Because remember, you're walking up and down stairs with everything.
Oh, yeah.
It was fascinating. 1900 House, if you can Google it or something, if they had copies, I would force any kid to watch it. I thought that was the only reality TV I ever saw that was worth it. Then they did another one to be on the prairie in a cabin, you know, a prairie farmer one, which was brilliant, too. But, yeah, there.
A lot of PBS. I don't know how I missed that one, so I'm going to have to check it out.
This was years ago. And Google it. I would be curious. I've never Googled it again because it was obviously a British production. And it was wonderful. It was just great to see. And the kids went through all the stages. This is awful. And you had to go shopping, and you could only buy the things that were made in the 1900s.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So if you didn't have it, you had to make it.
I could so picture their faces and what was going through their minds, and love every minute of it.
Yeah. I loved it. Just from a history perspective, it's like, this is fascinating. Who knew?
Exactly. And I love those shows, and I do make my children, not so much anymore because they're pretty much grown, but I used to make them sit and watch things like that, or I'd make them watch some talk shows that had a topic about bullying or about alcohol or drugs or school-related things or abuse, you know, men don't hit women. And, if you know, telling my daughter, I have three boys and one daughter, and I would tell them, the boys, you watch this, this is what you don't do to women, and telling my daughter, and this is what you don't let happen to you, you know, that kind of thing. And it stuck with them. I mean, as they got older, I found out more and more that the things that you really say to them and you don't think they're paying attention, it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting what they absorb, but mainly, again, how we treat each other, you know?
Right.
It's so interesting, and I'm still so fascinated. Even in kindergarten, when I would look at the kids I was teaching, they are fully-fledged personalities.
Yes.
Again, they don't have to say that way, but I'm looking at them going, serial killer, doctor, lawyer, you know? You know, it's that clear to you at that time. And they were adorable, you know? They were great. I loved kindergarten. Hardest job I've ever done physically.
Yeah,
kindergarten was amazing.
Trying to get them to sit still for any amount of time.
Oh, you have to be faster than them. That's why it was exhausting. You have to outthink them. The teachers I was working with, I'm like, you people are twice my age almost. You are God.
Right?
Because they were just sneaky. And the one thing it gave me, I had such a good memory from acting, I could memorize seating charts in a minute. And there's nothing more terrifying to a child to have his name called by a stranger right off the bat, a teacher. It's like, oh, I'm spotted.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now I can't get away with anything.
No, right? Exactly. Exactly. And I do just enough Spanish to make them think I was fluent. And they go, Mr. LeBlanc, you speak Spanish? I'd go, no. And I go, siéntate, por favor. And they go, Mr. LeBlanc, you speak Spanish? They would never try it again. You know, I knew very little, but I could pronounce it perfectly.
Well, how about French, since you're in New Orleans?
French, I'm in my third year of it now, of tutoring. I'm in the middle of my third year. They send us to, I, you know, under the heading of education's wasted on kids, I took Russian because there's a language requirement in medical schools back in the day. They have them, the good ones have put them back. But it was either Russian, German, English, one of the science languages. And I took Russian because I was fascinated with the history. And I can spell it, and my vocabulary is crazy. I can still pronounce it all. But now, on my own, I've had a French tutor. We're number one in France, by the way, at Young and the Restless. So I'm not above playing that. I want to move there, and I'm self-taught in my art, and I want to go to school there. I want to, when I finally get to go, and act there. And I do my interviews now when they have this television festival in Monte Carlo. They send us to every year. In, you know, all the CSIs are there, and Y&R and B and Bold and Beautiful are huge there, so they send a contingent. And I'm doing my interviews in French. They're very patient. It's very slow.
Yeah.
But I have a ball. I have it tomorrow, every Saturday, 2 hours at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Well,
I
believe 100% in keeping on going to school and learning new things, even if you only take one class, you know, once a year.
Yeah.
Just to keep going that.
No such thing as retirement.
Right.
I don't think.
No.
You change what you do, but I've never seen a successful. I mean, you travel for a while if you want. And even travel is your passion. But, I mean, I don't know if we can anymore financially. But even then, I've seen people who, without a plan, just kind of implode. I like the thought. I love, you know, I can do art. When I'm an ancient person, yeah, I can act when I'm old. You know, that's one of those professions where they're not going to put you out to pasture because you physically can't do it anymore. They can, if you're good enough, you know, you can go to, or lucky enough, both of them, you can go on. But it's one of those passions. And, it keeps you pliable. It's like, I like hanging out. It's wonderful to be with the kids who come on the show or anyone. And you have to remember what excitement is and what the idea of endless possibility is, because if you lose those two things, you just get old. I mean, then you're done.
There's
a certain flexibility there that I could be really calcified. I know I can. And they come in and you want, you know, for me, it's like, do you want other jobs? Do you want this book to sell? Do you want, well, you know what? Everyone would be doing it if it were easy. And you've got to maintain the same enthusiasm and energy that you had when you were in your 20s, because that's how it gets done. So make it happen. You know, it's one of those things we were talking about. Poor Josh, you know, has this knee injury, and we were talking about it. And my dad, 87, still goes to the gym. Is like, never stop moving. You just can't stop moving.
Right.
I think that's what keeps my 90-year-old grandmother going. She's been near death quite a few times, but she keeps herself busy. And, you know, she's in one of the retirement areas in California, and she plays games, and she talks with her friends, and she, you know, she keeps going, and
yeah.
I think that's what
God bless. She's a gift 90. Gosh.
Yes, and believe
me,
she's really. There was one time I flew out there because they said, "All right, that's it. You got to come and say goodbye." Well,
no.
they didn't know my grandmother.
That's funny. Well, yeah, I mean, it is. It's so, I find myself, you know, you can feel yourself getting kind of in your old ways and kind of, you know, cranky and ornery, and it just doesn't, there's too much to do, you know. But it's, and again, for your acting even, for life in general, it's like I said, the idea of having a certain amount of years to work and then you're going to have just one profession your whole life is kind of getting antiquated as it is. You might as well kind of, you know, spread out.
Very true.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
very true,
when you were doing the genealogy, did you find anybody that was famous that you were related to?
I do. Actually, I did it for everyone. I found our executive producer's real father. I done it for Liz Hendrickson. She's Dutch all the way back to when the middle of Queens was just a village, and her family's from Valley Springs still. Jess Walton. I like doing it for friends. I've done mine, the LeBlancs, the Cajuns are pretty easy because there's so many of them. There's like 100 families interbred, so people have done it. But it's the hardest to get back to great-great-grandfather. I'm still surprised that people don't know their great-great-grandfather's names. But I got the LeBlancs to 1650. And it's a big,
wow.
I mean, I think a third of all Cajuns are LeBlancs, so it's a massive family. But, yeah, my mother's is interesting because we're African-American on her side. My great-great-great-grandmother, father owned my great-great-grandmother. I have a receipt.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
This is New Orleans. With most of the South, it's not an uncommon story, but in New Orleans there was my email is Free Man of Color. There was a certain middle class of free African-Americans who didn't have citizenship, but they owned property, and they could live as close as they could to being free. And actually, when the Americans started coming in and replacing the French laws, they got very strict about it. So you had to, if you wanted to get your parents out of slavery or something, you had to buy them and own them. So it's a very interesting genealogy down there. But then she's a Creole, so she goes right back to French royalty. And I've got her to the Crusades pretty much. Once you lock into some kind of it's 1575, the king said you've got to keep church records. So that's the earliest kind of a peasant can be found. But if you lock in, and there's so many at that point, you know, and everyone's related to Marie Antoinette at a certain point.
Yeah.
Maybe it's me. Exactly. But it goes back to the Crusades, parts of her family, into minor nobility early on. Her first part of her family that came over to Louisiana was the son of a sea captain who fought Napoleon. And in one of the universities, they had the documents. His passports were handwritten then, and they have a physical description of him because there was no photography. It's so interesting. He had a big nose and a round chin. You know what I mean? You're reading it in French.
Right.
So, yeah, I find it endlessly fascinating. I think, again, it goes along with, you know, I didn't know I had any actors in my family. And then, you know, a great-great-great uncle is writing my lineal descendant, his brother, saying, oh, I'm doing a play, it's been a bad year, the theater collapsed in Nantes, and, you know, it's this letter of an actor.
I would love to read that.
Yeah, it's just, I have them. I have copies of papers, and I've been doing it for years now, and now finally, after Katrina, I had been taking all my family's pictures and stuff, and I started making albums now, and I've redone things, and it's so easy over the internet to get pictures from wide parts of the family that, you know, I will make that phone call to a family that we're related to but has never met and just say hi. You know, I've got really good at that.
That's got to blow them away.
Oh, it's amazing sometimes, you know, and I'll throw the Y&R card, even makes it better. Send me your records.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can lift pictures right off Facebook now, and I can keep everyone up to date on the new babies and stuff like that. I love it. I think it's so important to know these things on a certain level, not to trap you in them, but, again, to know where you've come from is really interesting.
Exactly.
I found that, you know, what people went through to get you where you are today.
Well, I looked into doing something like that, but unfortunately it's a little bit hard to do on my father's side because my father was adopted, and we don't have any records. You know, we can't access any records for his adoption while he's still alive because he doesn't want to know.
Yeah, see. My uncle, I never was able to find. We found out, and in those days they kept secrets. The first thing first thing you step for any of this is you go talk to your oldest relative.
Right.
But in those days, they didn't talk about divorce or adoption or anything. My mother remembers, that's what everyone said. You'd walk in the room and everyone switched to French.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You just switched to French.
Yeah. I could see that happening, too.
Yeah, over and over again. If it was Yiddish or it was anything, as soon as the kids came in. And then they just wouldn't. I didn't know people were divorced in my family till I was an adult, and an older relative let it slip. You know, it's that kind of thing. It's like, really?
Oh, my
divorce
God. Wow.
You're worried about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something that happened to me when I was 16. My grandmother ended up telling me something I didn't know, and I was just blown away. But she thought I would take it the wrong way, and I didn't. I you know, I guess it was that day and age when you just accepted things like that. So she's like, oh, so you're okay with it? I said, yeah, I'm fine.
Oh, you know what? Oh, that's funny. Can we take just a second?
Sure.
Just something. I'm in the house. There's a cat situation. Hold on, Jess. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead. Well, Well, to our listeners listening, we're going to go ahead and pick up calls when Christian gets back on. It's the phone number is 718-506-1540, and press 1 if you'd like to speak with him. We are taking calls in order in which they were received, so we'll try to get to everybody that we can. We have to respect Christian's time, too.
Yeah, most definitely.
Well, Dawn, I think you should sing.
Do you want to continue having the listening audience, or do you want everyone to drop off the show right now?
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Dawn was just going to sing.
Oh, you know what? I can
no,
go
Dawn.
With you. I can swing with that.
No, I want to sing. I really just don't want to ruin it for everyone.
Oh, come on.
No way.
In college, roommates used to hate me. I'd be like, rise and shine and give God your glory, glory. When you're not a morning person, that
oh,
song can great.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It can great.
No, it's not going to work.
Kind of enjoyed it.
Well, Kristen, would you mind taking some phone calls?
I would love
have a lot
to take
of people
phone
holding.
Calls.
Okay, thank you.
Let release the Kraken.
I'm going to do that, and I'm going to release David now. Actually, I'll bring him on. David, say hello to Christian.
Hey, Christian. How are you doing?
Very good, David. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I've been an enthusiast of yours all the way back to your As the World Turns days.
Oh, good Lord. We were children then. Just remember
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we were.
Children.
My question is to you. What was it like bringing Michael Baldwin back to your old Oakdale days?
Right, huh? And I went back as Michael Baldwin. I didn't go back as Kirk McCall, huh?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it was a ball. It was interesting to see how much that – and none of the people I knew back then were there. But it was the first time I worked with Maura and Michael Park and Greg Kinnear. I mean, Ken Schreiner. Ken Schreiner was there, and they've all been on our show, except Michael Park. He's on Broadway. What does he need us for?
Yeah.
But we had a ball, and the directors I met there are on our show. Sarah Smythe, who was Maria Bell's assistant, was on our show. So it's so funny, but it was one day. They flew me out there. They rushed me to Brooklyn, and I got to say, we laughed for 24 hours. It was so much fun, and they were such a great generous group of people, because you know you're walking into you know another person's home basically, and
right.
They couldn't have been nicer. And I had a ball. It's one of the great adventures. I'm so Barbara Bloom allowed me to do that, and I'm so grateful because you know it's a tricky situation, but I love that there should be a community of shows. You know, we're all on CBS. We should have been doing that. I wish a lot of that, more of that could have happened. I always thought that was an interesting thing if you had people kind of travel to other shows. You know, from you know,
yeah.
At least your same
yeah,
network.
Definitely.
Crossovers, yeah.
But I had a ball.
Crossovers work.
Yeah, Lauren and them. Lauren goes over to B&B. I haven't gone to B&B. I keep pushing because I wanted to work with Susan Flannery, which I will not be able to do now.
Oh,
but actually,
yeah.
I do Venice the series, and Susan's
yes,
directing, so he's had a
thing.
Ball. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so thank you. It was wonderful. I loved it.
Now, we had Jean Cooper on recently. We interviewed her, and she said that when – she went over there. When you heard about it, you were saying, I want to go.
Yeah. Oh, she wrote it in her book. She's so funny. I brought it up, and I didn't know she had written this stuff about me. And it was so sweet. You know, if my mother's alive, you want to show her the book, because that's how you are. Yeah, see, look, I am nice, Ma.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Jeannie is the instigator. She, that was Guiding Light, to come over to do their last show. And
right.
She just thought, out of honor to them, you know, and respect. And we were going to go over and be an extra. I mean, I'm always game. I will go with Jeannie anywhere. She's my hero. We've traveled all over. She will leave you in her dust. I have such images of her. One is outside of a casino in rural Mississippi. I'm in an arbitrary Indian casino in the middle of nowhere. And we're getting into our car and we're leaving. And Jeannie, you know, little Jeannie, you know, her golden hair and tiny and glittery in her outfit and frail, you know, just, you know, beautiful. Mm-hmm. And this man comes up. It's a huge African-American man. He's got his hat on backwards. He's got bling. It looks like something right out of the rapper video. And huge. And he comes walking up to the car. And he talks to our security. And he goes, And it was so sweet. He goes, "May I hug Miss Cooper?"
Aww.
And he goes up to her like she's a child. She goes, "Sure." You know, hurry, come on. And like she was made of china. He puts his arms around her and just and gives her a little hug. And it was just adorable. Those are the kind of fans she has. You know, she puts butts in seats, I'm telling you. And I think one of the successes of our shows, one of the genius moves of our show, is that you didn't get rid of your older characters. And there is no other show where an 82 or 3-year-old pulls major storyline. And a lot of that. Everyone
right.
wants to see pretty young mm-hmm. things. But you want to see the pretty young thing arguing with their grandmother.
Right.
Or
mm-hmm.
or with their parents. Or you want to see, and that was his whole point, Bill, intergenerational human relationships are going to be the core
yeah.
of your show.
And that's why that show is number one.
Yep, it's yeah. been number one for 20-something years, and that's why. I will tell you exactly
20,
that's why.
24, yeah, I think is recently
yeah,
what I saw.
Yeah, someone just congratulated us, and they threw out a huge
mm-hmm.
number. And I had, you know, you have a number from, I had 14 in my head for so many years, I can't leave it. So it's, you know, considerably more now. But, yeah, and I will tell you, she's one of the reasons. She's the only original character from day one.
Yeah.
And we love her
yeah.
and adore her.
Oh, no, there's nothing. I've sat talking with her, and she talks crazy. She talks like where are you now, Jeannie? But you get into that rhythm, and I remember sitting in her big suite, because any hotel will just give her whatever they've got. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
And the sun's going down, and it's shining through the window, and we're just talking. And she's just talking, and it's the shank of the day, and we've done all our appearances, and we're waiting to go to dinner. And it's just wonderful. You know, you just sit there, and I was taught. All my acting teachers were in their 80s. Julie Harris, Charles Nelson Reilly, Eileen Brennan, the people I worked with. I
oh,
learned
I love
Carol
them
Cook,
all.
Tommy
yeah.
Troop. They were all there, and from them you learned what it took to get there and still be in it at 80 or 75. I was on the stage with Julie Harris when she hit 70.
Oh.
And there's a certain amount of craziness has to be in there, certain amount
yeah.
of crazy.
Yeah,
but a good
kind of
crazy.
Exactly, because it comes out of the passion you have for it.
Yes.
And that has to keep you going, because there are easier ways to make a buck if that's what you're in it for.
Right.
You know, it's like a doctor or a teacher or a parent. If you want it to make money, you're in the wrong thing.
Right.
You know, you've got to do it for passion. And if you're lucky enough to have a job that you're passionate about, then you have got 90% of the battle done. You know.
Yeah, you could always go work for somebody as a busboy like you did for Leona Helmsley.
I was the best boy. I was the best busboy ever. And you know, when they offered me a waiter job, now that was in those days at the Helmsley Palace, that was money in the 80s.
Yes.
I would pull home stuff. I put in my shoes because I knew no mugger would check my shoe, right?
Right.
Smart. So smart from Louisiana on a subway.
Yeah.
Right? So, they offered me a waiter position, and you got four big diamonds on a pin as a waiter, and they offered Azewell Turns the same day. I said I'll take Azewell Turns, but the same
yeah,
day
really?
It happened, because it took a long time. I worked for a year, but I say a long time. People have worked. I mean, but I worked as a busboy for a year. But I had a strong Spanish accent. It was I went to go apply to the hospital, and I had so many sweet people in New York. It's people never believe me. My first day in New York, he must have smelled the newness. He turned his meter off. He had talked so much about where not to go and where to go. He actually
mm-hmm.
turned his meter off because he had missed so many streets, telling me, don't go there. Go live here if you want to.
Oh, well, that was
you know,
great.
Nobody believes
yeah.
me that a New York cabbie turned his meter off. And then
yeah.
I was about to apply for a job at the hospital down in Brooklyn. And they go, no, my roommate's the personal director. The Helmsley didn't have to advertise for anyone to work there. That's how
right.
big it was. Says, my roommate's the personal director. Go there. And they gave me this. No actors there. So I got all the clothes out. I closed out all the bars and everything. And, I mean, Frank Sinatra's birthday party, like the Chinese
oh
mafia.
God.
I mean, the money you saw go through the place
oh
was amazing. I made hundreds of dollars as a busboy.
Oh,
wow.
That's a really something you don't hear about, because I worked as a waitress and a bartender all my life. And
mm-hmm.
Well, not all of it, but most of it. And the busboys didn't nearly make as much as we did. So
oh, the waitresses made more. But
yeah.
I was lucky enough to get the cocktail service. So you got
yeah.
the expensive desserts.
Perfect.
And coffee was $25,
mm-hmm.
you know, for a coffee at the Art House, right there behind
oh.
St. Patrick's Cathedral. And then and these desserts, mille feuilles and all this stuff. I had the fattest roommate in the world because I kept bringing everything home. but you and it was a quick turnover because it's dessert and cocktails. And then there were no actors, so I closed out everyone. They let me have closing, so I was tipped out by all the bars.
That's perfect. That's when everybody's drunk. I worked in a country club, and I used to get the men's club. And they would golf during the day, and then in the evening they would go back to the men's club, and they would play cards or shoot craps or something and drink. Oh,
that's when you get them.
Did I bring home the money, let me tell you.
That's it. And I was like 2 or 3, 2 in the morning, and I got home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's perfect.
But I was able to, I'd sleep till 10, get up, do auditions, and do acting class, and then go back to work at 6.
That was a perfect job.
Yep.
Well, let me go ahead and grab another call here. We have Enrique. Enrique, say hello to Christian.
Hello, Christian.
Hi, Enrique. How are you?
I'm doing great. I was so happy watching YNR today. It's been getting awesome lately.
They've got a lot going on, I know.
Yeah, and with Fenmore turning into like half Michael, half Kevin, it's going to be really awesome.
He's a pain in the butt. That's what he is. Half nothing. Kids today. Yeah, he's wonderful. Max Eric is his name, and he's in a boy band.
Yes.
Twittering about it because I'm like telling people he's broken my heart.
Aww.
Michael's heart. Michael wants him to be a lawyer. I keep telling him, stop dancing.
Yeah.
You're a lawyer. Would you have a question, Enrique?
Yeah. Yes, I do. Let's go back to your As the World Turns days. How was it like working with, Marissa Tomei?
Oh, she was really new then, and so was Julianne Moore, relatively. They had never done that before, so it was interesting. But even then, Marissa had a gift. You liked to, it's the same thing with Meg Ryan. There was something about them you wanted to watch. You just found them charming and hypnotic. And she was just a ball of energy. I mean, she was from Brooklyn. They had family in Brooklyn. There was a Brooklyn contingent. They loved it. They were tough. But just, we had a ball. The younger storyline was just Brett Jameson, Marissa, and Meg Ryan. And we just, Meg Ryan was actually playing much older than me. But it really was wonderful. And I learned a lot from her of just being natural. Because, again, she was younger than me and coming up from, university. I had just graduated from school. But she was still, wanting to go to Boston U. She never did, I would imagine. But, yeah, she was talented then. I was very lucky to be in the middle of all that. I learned a lot from them.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah, thank you. It was.
Thank you for calling in, Enrique. We're going to go ahead and move on to the next caller because we got to wrap up soon.
Say bye.
Bye-bye, Enrique.
Bye, Enrique.
Okay, we'll take this one last call. This is Colleen. She's from Nashville, and she wants to say howdy.
Hey, Colleen, Nashville, that's my people.
Hey, Christian, I am Nashville, Pam, but I am a Cajun woman.
Yes, you are.
That means you can cook. I got you.
Yeah, I can cook. I cooked the gumbo today.
Oh, I got it in the freezer. I've got mine. Did mine last week. Freezes beautifully.
I cooked, and it's best leftovers. The second day is always
better. You're
right.
It's totally true. The spices settle. You're absolutely right.
It is. It's always better the second day.
Yeah, isn't it? Most of beans and rice, all of those dishes are always good the second day. Better.
They are. That's all I know how to cook is Cajun, really. But, Christian, I want to give you a Golden Girls quote. Thanks for being a friend.
Aw, thank you.
Seriously. I am Cajun Nana on Twitter. Cajun
oh,
Nana
you
3.
Are? Oh,
yeah,
hi, Cajun Nana. That's funny.
Cajun Nana 3, and the 3 comes from 3 grandkids, but as of the 12th, I will have 6.
Oh, my God.
So I may have to change that 3 to a 6 coming soon. But
oh
anyway,
God.
I wanted to say hello, Cajun friend.
Oh, thank you. Well, I guarantee you had a good time for Trusha.
You got it, baby.
They take them flatties and they talk all sorts of things to you.
Oh, it's in your 20-something years. But every time I go home, I come back and they say, oh, Lord, you've been back home.
Right. So I come back with all my y'alls and, it's all going on. I came back last time with 15 extra pounds. That's what I come back with.
Oh, I do it every time. I just checked my freezer today. I got sausage and boudin very, very low. So I'm going
you
home next
do,
week.
You know, I found that they sell on Dewey and Boudin at the mall behind CBS. Very excited about this.
Yeah, but it, where's it from?
Yeah, you know, it's from Louisiana, but still not fresh, because I lived out by La Place in the convent where they make that stuff, you know, when you really, you know, the pig, you knew the pig.
Yeah.
No,
the Yankees
don't understand that.
We have a Cajun microwave, and we are doing the pig, you know, the whole nine yards, all that
uh-huh.
stuff. So my mother just passed away, and it's
oh, I'm so
sadly.
Sorry.
Yeah, matter of fact, when you were in New Orleans, that's Pam,
about
she passed away on your birthday.
Oh, how old was she?
She was 77.
77.
Pam, happy belated birthday. I realized she passed away on your birthday.
Oh, Lord.
Me?
Yeah. It wasn't your birthday November 5th?
No, my birthday's in April.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'll
tell
you December 5th. But anyway, Christian.
Yes, ma'am.
I won't tie up anyone else's time. I just wanted to thank you. I know we had a little problem getting connected on Twitter and Facebook. But
now you're all over it. I'm here.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's been a pleasure, really. George and Patty, tell them hello for me.
I sure will. And please, thank you so much for watching and being such a wonderful supporter of the show.
Well, that's my mother to thank for that, because I can I'm about your age, and she had me hooked to that TV probably 8 or 10 years old.
That's my favorite stories, because it's always the grandmother, the mother, and the daughter. I love
always.
It. Multi-generational watching the
mm-hmm.
show. It's my favorite stories, and you hear it all the time.
And
the husbands are there,
it.
Too. They just don't admit it.
She recorded it till the day she died.
Oh, I love hearing
she
that.
Had it, she had it recorded November 5th as I was going through her things, and I
oh.
noticed it. But anyway, I am coming to L.A. February or March. I will be seeing George and KC and
oh.
a few others.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
I hope I get to say hello to you.
I hope so, too. We'll keep in touch. George will tell me, I'm sure. He's got a big old mouth. George, by the way, for those who are listening, is the head of the hair department. And
we love him.
He's my partner in crime.
Yes.
Oh, I do know this.
You do. I know you do.
Tell him to quit hacking Shannon's account.
To what?
To quit hacking Shannon's account.
Oh, he's an awful hacker. for those of who are listening, we do hack each other's. I'm the best hacker. I give him smart ones. He just goes right to, like, gastrointestinal problems. That's what he does. He's awful.
Actually, your Showtime brother, Greg, did it yesterday.
No, I saw Greg's. He was pretty intelligent. I'm going bald. Any suggestions? That was very funny.
No,
I told him.
Elevator.
I told him that Guzman means lactating she monkey.
Oh my God!
Spanish.
Oh.
That's
well,
how
listen,
we roll.
You have a great evening. Thanks for taking my call.
It was such a pleasure talking to you.
Pam,
thanks for calling in, Colleen.
Okay, y'all have a great evening.
Thank you so much.
Talk
Take
to y'all
care.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Well, we're at the top of the hour. We don't want to infringe on your time. We want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for this wonderful. It wasn't even like an interview. It was
no,
just like
I just
talking.
Had a best time. But thank you guys so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
I did. I'm looking at the clock now going, oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. It flew by.
And only I'd keep you on. I've got another interview. I'm doing a... Somehow I don't know how I get into it. Fred Willer's doing what they call a Santathon, so I've been thrown into a comedy show with Eric Martzoff from Days of Our Lives. So.
Oh.
Let the insanity
good.
Begin.
Yeah. One quick thing. Are you going to be in season 4 of Venice?
I am.
Oh, good.
Yes, because they just
good.
Teased me at the very end
good.
There.
Good.
But, yeah.
Glad to hear it. It's a great web series, and I love that you've joined with them. A lot of great actors on there, many faces
oh.
I recognize. So
wonderful. And Fumbling Through the Pieces, too. I mean,
yes.
That's
oh,
wonderful.
My God,
yeah.
That's so funny. And can't wait to see The Grove, either. That's another one.
Oh, yeah, we had a ball. Gosh. Yeah, look, I show up at the opening of an envelope, apparently, because I'm in all of them. But it's so, you know, the wonderful thing about that is these are people you'd never, because they're different networks, or
mm-hmm.
you never get to work with. And I just had... Just such an amazing time. I had scenes with Crystal in Venice and or on the Grove, and you know, Nadia and I never worked together. We're brother and sister. She's on Days, and I'm, you know, another network.
Yeah.
It's just it's a ball and such
Robert
good
S. Woods. We cannot wait to see him.
Robert,
because...
I never worked with him. I don't think I'd ever met Robert actually.
Oh,
and
I love
him. He was wonderful. He is what a delight that man is. He is I can't say enough good things about him. And right. So good. Wait till you right. see his stuff.
Oh, I know. I've watched him for many, many years on One Life to Live. So I love him and adore him. And I'm glad I'm going to see his face somewhere again.
Yes, yes. Me too. I can't believe he's hidden up on that farm. I said, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah. All
doing.
Hidden up on a farm.
Right.
It's like Maine or something.
Well,
you
go, Kristen, and you keep working, and we'll keep watching. We
little
love
lady,
you,
thank
and
you
we
so
wish
much.
You all the best.
Thank you so much for everything. And honestly, I don't feel like I don't know it was an interview.
I know, right?
I apologize for anything I might have rambled on about, but thank you.
No,
thank you.
We loved it.
Yes.
Loved every second.
Oh,
yes,
good,
and we would
good.
Love to have you back again sometime next year.
Well, anytime. Thank you so much for asking me.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that certainly was not an interview, but I'll tell you, it was one of the most interesting. Up there with Jeannie Cooper with the stories, I could listen for hours on end.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. That was just one of the most amazing interviews I think we've done yet. He's a phenomenal person, like you say, very much like Dean. He is, oh gosh, story upon story. And who knew that he started out aspiring to be a doctor, was going to school for that, and then landed into acting almost by accident, and voila, look at what we have today. And I'm so glad he pursued acting, because he's wonderful. He is a phenomenal actor, and now he's branched out. He's doing some web series stuff, so he's a great human being on top of that. He's just very, very personable and very nice. The kind of guy you'd want to go have dinner with and just sit and chat and laugh and talk.
Exactly.
For hours
exactly.
on end, you know.
Yeah. And I want to give a shout-out to my special friend that helped us get Kristen on the show. Thank you from our hearts for helping us out with that. And I'm just, like, almost speechless here. He was so much fun. He was so much fun, so
yeah.
interesting. So join us again. We're going to take tomorrow off, although Dawn does have a show, and I'll talk about that in a second. If you missed any of our previous podcasts, you can also go on our website at take2radio.com, as well as see any upcoming guests, videos. We have a bunch of different stuff on there. Dawn worked hard on it, and she did a fantastic job. Also, our show is on iTunes for free. Thank you, David, for reminding me about that. You can follow us on Twitter at Take2Radio, and this 2 is always the number 2. Dawn is at DawnTake2Radio. Follow us on Blog Talk. They'll send you out an email every time we have an upcoming guest, and you'll never miss a show. And then Dawn has a show of her own called Jam and Jukebox on Blog Talk, and she plays indie artist music as well as she does interviews with them. So catch her show tomorrow. What time is it at?
It's at 7 p.m. And this week, seeing as how we're in the midst of the holiday season, we'll be playing some great holiday music, some that you know and some that you won't, by indie artists. It's going to be all indie artist music. So great show. I think we've got a great mix music lined up, so it starts 7 p.m. Eastern tomorrow night.
And that would be, you could follow her at Jam and Jukebox, and that's without the G, so it's J-A-M-M-I-N Jukebox.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of Christmas songs, I want to end the show today with a song by Last Breath. They're a UK band, and they made a new Christmas song called Jingle All the Way. If you download it from the website, it's www.lastbreathrock.weebly.com. It would be a little over $3 in U.S. money and £2 in the U.K. All the proceeds goes to the Bryan House in the U.K. It's for children and young adults who have untreatable diseases and unfortunately won't make it through. And it helps bring their families together so they can all stay together and spend as much time as possible with them. So try to make somebody else's Christmas a little bit happier and download the song. Even if you don't listen to it, give it to somebody else as a gift. There's always people in this world that love to listen to Christmas music, like Dawn. pass it on to her. But I'm going to go ahead and close with that, and I hope you enjoy it. God bless. Thank you all for joining us tonight, and we'll see you on Sunday for Joey Oskies at 5 p.m. Eastern, another UK singer, and I know you're going to adore him. So Ding. You want to say goodnight?
Good night to everyone out there. Enjoy your weekend. Happy Friday to you. Happy weekend. The weekend is here, and we will be right back here with you at Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern.
Yes, and if you want to follow Last Breath, they're on Twitter at Last Breath Rock. And here is their song, Jingle All the Way. Good night and God bless.
Good night, everyone.
I remember